You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Returneth!
Dice.org.au.
What are we doing?
What is going on?
So we've got a new system in the studio that you may know, so that's why everything's kind of gone to hell. Anyway, yes, this is the Dice Men coming. Thank you very much.
The Dice Men Returneth.
Okay, thank you again, lads. Shocking. So episode 216 on this Thursday, the 14th of June. Now, we are the people that talk to you all about your tabletop games, your card games, your board games. Now, some people out there might think that and go, oh, that's not terribly exciting. And then we say, well, we just come back from a convention where that's all we did for, like, you know, 76 hours straight.
Yeah.
To which they go, well, that's even less exciting. And I'll go, I'll tell you what we did.
You've even got your talking finger up.
I know. The man to my left, right, he did not go to bed till nearly 3 o'clock in the morning on a Friday night. And the last thing he did was drink, imaginary and pretend red wine and poison, but yes, then the next morning in the real world threw his guts up in our hotel room.
So, a little bit of ginger ale, didn't you, Mark?
Yes. So there's your rock and roll. That is Dice Man Mark to my left. To my right, a man that as soon as he got out of Tasmania and landed in Melbourne, went and got himself some drugs.
Hey.
As soon as he got there. Now, I'll leave it up to you if it's hardcore street drugs or if he went to the doctor and said, my back's giving me jip because I can't get out of chairs properly. Would be Dice Man Garth. And,
yeah,
myself, Dice Man Leon, I spent majority of Saturday night in a large conference room filled with lots of people very excited while I was jumping around with four other men while wearing a leather-studded mask.
Yes.
So if that's not sex, drugs and rock and roll at a board game convention, I don't know what is.
That's a pretty good synopsis of BorderCon, I must say.
Absolutely. It was pretty full-on for 4 days straight.
Yes.
Damn right.
And we were the last men standing most of the night.
Was good. So, look, yes, we are the Dice Men Cometh, Tasmania's and Australia's number one board gaming podcast and radio show. Leon, Mark,
yes,
we got to say thanks to Area 52 because that's what they pay us for.
Yes.
So thanks, Area 52. But what are we talking about tonight? Well, clearly we're talking about the Kenner Spiel nominated games that we have all been able to play over the weekend.
One of the fantastic things about BorderCon every year is we get to pick up on some of the hits from Essen that have not made their way to our Fair Isle yet. And we get to catch up on the not the Kinderspiel, because there's no Kinders there. The Spiel and the Kennerspiel.
Yes.
We managed to get all three of the Kennerspiel nominated games to the table. We had a few different thoughts.
I think we did, but
and, so it's going to be a Kenner extravaganza tonight.
It sure will be. But what we're going to attempt to do is throw to a song. Edge Radio have changed the whole system in the 2 weeks since we were last on air, so this is a learning process. Mark has forgotten how to push buttons.
Mm.
But, Mark, do you want to try and throw us to a song, and then we'll come back and start with game one of three, which are the Kenner-nominated games. You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
That was Regurgitator with Everyday Formula, some of Australia's best and brightest there. On Edge Radio 99.3 FM, The Dice Men Cometh, proudly brought to you by our good friends at Area 52, who have all the games. I went in there the other day. I bought some after BorderCon. I was all excited about the games. I'd played all the games. I still went in there to buy more.
And I just cannot get enough.
I have an issue, which is why I'm here doing a radio show. So we're going to talk about these award-nominated games and whether they should be or not.
Hey, Garth.
Ooh. Yeah.
Can you pronounce the name of this first game we're going to talk about?
Yeah, it can.
Kannst du pronounce it, dieser Game?
Ich.
Spiel, ja, Brett?
So, look, yes, we have been lucky enough to play the three Kenner Spiel nominated games over the last week or so. And the first one that we do want to talk about is Die Quacksalber von Quedlinburg.
Sorry?
Die Quacksalber von Quedlinburg by Wolfgang Wasch, who is an Austrian game designer who has just hit several things out of several ballparks, if nominations are to be believed. Because we're going to be talking about at least two of his games tonight, potentially a third one next week, and he's just some Austrian designer who's come out of nowhere and landed himself, well, let's just do a spoiler, two Kenner's Spiel nominated games and one Spiel. Not it's, bad.
I don't think that is precedented in our hobby.
And if it, someone got two, you'd go, oh, well done. They've been designing for years. That's a really impressive feat. To somebody that kind of come out of nowhere to have three, it's a bit...
Yeah.
So, look, the main thing is, are his games any good?
Well, we'll see.
So let's start with De Quacksalber von Quedlinburg, or the Quacks of Quedlinburg, for those who can't understand my perfectly fluent German. We are talking about a 2-4 player game based in Quedlinburg. Now, I'll just do a little bit of translation. D, or die, D-I-E, stands for the. Quacksalber is like your quacks, your charlatan doctors. Von could be of, and Quedlinburg is Quedlinburg. So if you don't speak German, it's the quacks of Quedlinburg, the doctors of Quedlinburg. In the blurb, it says you're charlatan. So you're basically going to Quedlinburg because there's this 9-day bazaar within the city walls where the country's best miracle doctors and quack surgeons gather in one place to showcase their healing remedies. And that's really where you need to start with this game, because each of the 2-4 players will be playing rival quacks or doctors, trying to brew and create the most interesting and most powerful potions without it all going belly up and your potion exploding in your face.
Never.
That's not good.
No.
Now, that all sounds pretty exciting, and this is a Kenner Spiel game, so clearly it's complicated, but actually it's really that not. But the easy way to describe this is a bag-building game. This
stuff
has become a bit of a mechanic du jour.
Yeah, I was going to say, for those listeners who just decided they'd be sitting at home tonight at 7 o'clock and they just might flick on the radio and see what random show they might find, boy, they didn't quite guess what they were going to get, did they?
Yes.
What's a bag builder?
So, a bag-building game is where each player's going to start with their own little velvet or plastic or velveteen or bag-related bag, and it's going to start... Everyone's going to have the same core ingredients or chits.
Could I use my Woolworths bag for life?
You can.
My canvas bag? Lovely.
You can, yes. I'm very ecologically minded.
Good.
But you can use plastic and non-biodegradable stuff should you choose to be bad to the planet.
That's well, we've got to get rid of those dolphins some way. Their IQ keeps rising, our keeps going down.
Exactly. I do my part by not eating seafood. I'm trying to save the whales that way. Anyway, every player is going to start with exactly the same number of chits in your bag. And the ones that are the most important are these little dastardly white ones that are numbered 1 or 2 or 3. Because they are going to be all-consuming for your next, let's say, 45 minutes of your life while you play this game. The way each turn is going to start is that everyone will simultaneously put their hands in their own bags and draw one tile. You're then going to place that little tile on the starting spot of your board. Now, your board is a top-down view of a cauldron, and it's sort of in a spiral shape. You're going to start at this predetermined central location, and that may change depending on how good or bad you're doing in the game. But you're going to start there, and you're going to do this spiral shape out and out and out and out and out until the very end of the cauldron. Now, it's important to note that this spiral shape has like three key elements listed on every single space. So you'll have space 1 all the way round and round and round to space 35. Each of those spaces will at least have two things. It'll have the number of victory points that you'll get by getting to that space, the number of dollary dues, or as they say in German, das dollary dues.
Yes.
Which you can spend to upgrade and buy more ingredients. And then every so often you'll get this beautiful little ruby symbol, which means that you might get a ruby should you finish your potion on exactly that spot.
Yeah.
I guess signifying that you've created this really nice potion. So there are three things you need to be aware of. So everyone simultaneously is going to start by drawing a tile out. And chances are at the beginning, you're going to draw a fair amount of these little white ones. Now, that's not necessarily bad because there are 4 number 1 white ones. There are 3 number 2s, I think, or maybe 2 number 2s.
Yeah,
and there's
one
number 3, which we hate that one. You draw your number out. You take a look at it. If it is a number 1, you simply place it to the first available free spot. If it's a number 2, you leave one gap and place the 2. And that's your turn. And everyone's going to take turns simultaneously until generally one thing happens, which is players decide to stop or one player gets more than seven of those little chits out, or sorry, a cumulative total of 7 points out of those white chits, because that signifies that your cauldron has exploded and you are failing.
Yep.
You are absolutely being a failure doctor.
So it's a push your luck element.
It is very much push your luck.
Trying to get as much stuff out as you like. And other chits, and we'll talk about them in a minute, I'm sure, other chits don't count no matter what their numbers are.
Correct.
Only the white ones count for whether you bust or not.
Exactly. So this is where the game starts off with a little bit of a slow burn, because everyone's got the same sort of basic tiles and it's really just coming out as a bit of luck. But this is where you do have a couple of different ingredients. You might have some pumpkins, or you might have some toadstools, or as the game progresses, you might have some mandrake, or you might have some crow's skulls, or you might even have a garden spider. Mm-hmm. All of which is pretty exciting, especially if you're trying to make these potions. They are all numbered as well. So if you place one down and it happens to have a number two on it, you move that one space from your last place tile and progress along the way. They're all wonderful. The only ones that count towards your potion being a dud and your whole cauldron exploding is these little white ones. And I think they're the cherry bombs. When you read the rules, they're the cherry tiles that are the ones that are going to explode your potion.
Some ingredient, obviously, that you don't want too much.
Correct. So the rounds are all simultaneous. You'll all draw tiles out of the bags. You'll all place them on your tiles. You get to decide when you stop. You could stop when you've reached all seven of your cherry bomb tiles, that's the number. You could choose to stop earlier. You could try and push your luck and fail miserably and have your thing explode. But ultimately, you're trying to get as far around that cauldron, that spiral-shaped cauldron, to get both points and also to get money. Because if you bust, you're still going to get one of those two things every turn, but you have to choose. Should I take the points or should I take the money, which will allow me to buy more ingredients?
Yeah.
Now, in the early game, you almost certainly want to be taking the money because you need to fatten up what's in your bag.
Yeah.
You need to buy more spiders or more toadstools or more pumpkins or more other ingredients, because they will not only have higher value numbers written on the tile so that you can progress around that spiral quicker, but they're also going to offer you some level of control. They're going to offer you some bonuses. So say, for example, I was able to draw out a mandrake, and I'd drawn that just after I'd drawn a cherry tile, the white ones. I can place the mandrake, and its special ability is to remove the cherry tile before it and stick it back in the bag. So that's awesome.
Yep.
Say I've got a spider, and it's one of the last two tiles that I've placed before I give up. That gives me some extra bonuses as well, which is kind of cool. Say, for example, I wanted to play a crow skull because crow skulls are metal.
Yes.
It allows me then to draw another tile out of the bag, go, I don't like this tile, throw it back in the bag and have another crack. And those bonus tiles become more powerful the more, I guess, the more spaces worth of
it's like the number four crow skull.
Yeah.
Which not only do you get to move up four spots, but you get to draw out four tokens
and choose one.
Keep one and then put the rest back. So it gives you more access to the better ones, the higher number ones.
I believe number four crow skull was big in Norway in the 90s.
There you go.
Just for all the youngins out there.
And the way, look, and that's how the game's going to progress. The round will end when everyone has either bust or decided to stop at a certain point.
Yep.
Then you'll determine who won that round. They'll roll a bonus die, which will give them maybe an ingredient or some victory points or something else. Then you go around and you will assign your own sort of... there's a couple of bonuses that might apply, but then you get to spend your money and you get to have your victory points thrown in. And that's really, really cool, because if you don't bust, you get both. It's played out over 9 rounds. It sounds quite long, but it's really, really, really not. We played, Mark, you and I, a four-player game, and it would be lucky if it played for 45 minutes, I dare say.
Yeah, I would have said, I don't know whether it would. We played really quickly, and we'd never played it before.
Exactly.
9 rounds. That's an interesting number.
Exactly. Well, it's over the 9 days of the Quiddling Bazaar.
Oh, how silly of me.
Exactly. So, at the end of round one, everyone will buy some ingredients generally, or instead of buying things, if you've busted, you'll get some victory points. Assign the points, and then generally I move to the front. Because that's how the whole game progressed. I ended up being in front, and I finished being in front.
Yes,
in that I won. But that raises an interesting point in that there's a couple of catch-up mechanics in this game as well. The score tracker has some very thematically appropriate rat's tails that are all dotted along the score track. And
not the hair variety.
Not the hair variety. That was me circa 1989.
Yeah, I had one too.
But every player who is not me and not winning, they will get to move their score track up equal to the number of rats' tails between their score marker and the winner. So in some cases, we had a player move up...
Like seven or eight spots.
Rats, which is a massive amount of free points for sucking at the game. But that keeps everyone invested and keeps everyone interested in it.
I think the other thing is the fact that when you bust, you don't get nothing.
Correct. You'll always get something.
So you at least have an opportunity to either keep up in the score or put some more ingredients in the bag. And some of those higher powered ones, like we said, the four crow skull that you pull out four. There was another one where you had, if you pull out a toadstool after one or more pumpkins, you get to move extra spots forward.
Yep.
I can't even remember what the rat fetus did because I didn't want a rat fetus in my bag.
Hmm.
But there was a rat fetus.
There was. There were several. Actually, they're called, I think, ghost breaths, but they look like rat fetuses. Anyway, the other thing that makes this a bit more balanced, which is incredibly important for this style of game, a, you know, entry-level Kennerspiel-nominated game, is that everyone who is not me and doesn't win, they generally get to move the starting point for their potion around this spiral a little bit more as well. So I might have been starting on the zero right in the dead center of the cauldron, but other players who are quite a bit further behind, because they're not me, might have been able to start like 11 spots further forward, which is massive, but it keeps the game close.
Yeah.
And that's kind of cool.
Yeah, there's a couple of other things. You've got a potion bottle, which is just basically a cardboard token, but if you pull out one of your cherry blossoms or whatever they are, you can basically go, oh, no, I don't want that. As long as you don't bust, you can flip that potion bottle and chuck that chip back in the bag. And then what's the other one I was going to say?
Well, then there's rubies.
Ah, the rubies, yes.
Yeah. So the rubies, they'll allow you to sort of get a couple of bonuses. They'll either allow you to refresh the potion that you've just used, which is an incredibly powerful little bottle of something to have. Otherwise...
Or you move your starting drop, if you like. So normally you start on drop zero. You can move your starting drop forward one. So instead of starting on zero, you start on one. And obviously if you can put a few rubies there, you can move forward quite a few spots.
Exactly. But really that's it. It's quite a... simple to play, easy to explain, although I've clearly butchered it, and quick game to play. So I had absolutely zero expectation of this game after reading about it and going into it and going, oh, really don't care too much about this game. But within 5 minutes, I was invested. I was really, really enjoying it. I was enjoying the very simple decision-making I had of how far can I go, the push-your-luck mechanic with... Oh, I'm going to always get something. I'm always going to get some money or I'm going to get some points. Ideally, I want to get both. I've got a very clear spread of different options I can choose in terms of the little tokens I can buy to go into my bag to allow me to hopefully get further around this spiral and get more points and more dollars. Every round has an event that you reveal and something might happen. So, for example, instead of busting at seven, you might bust at nine, or another one will reveal and everyone just gets a free ingredient in essence of their choice.
Just a nice little twist each
round. So there's nothing that's really bad. So it fits that Kenner.
Yeah.
People
aren't going to be upset.
Well, that rat tail thing, I think, sounds really interesting because that says to me that a game that's either been well designed or very well tested, and that I don't imagine when they first designed this game that was probably in there.
Mm.
I would think it probably came later down the line of playing it and people just smashing the score out of other people and going, you know what, we need to fix this because it's just not going to become fun to play.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they might have had idea from the beginning, but if they did that, they'd be designing a game that wasn't really balanced, I would think. So the fact that they've put that in there shows a lot of concern for the players in their enjoyment, which is a really cool thing, as opposed to, like, was it Food Chain Magnate? They say that everyone that plays that, the person that wins, like, quadruples everyone else's score normally. Yeah. Like, and you've been playing it for 3 hours looking at a board that looks worse than a prototype. Apparently that's fun.
Really?
Good on them.
Yes. That was on our list at Board Economy. We never got to it. I like with this, you know, you've got a choice of, was it four different ingredients, Garth? I can't remember, or more than four?
No, there's at least six.
You've got a choice of six ingredients where you Some of them combo, some of them do other things. So you've really got the opportunity to take whatever tack you like, and you can look and see, oh, everyone's getting those. Well, I don't want to be the same, so I'll go somewhere else. And then within the game, I think each of those six, plus there were some extras, each has four different versions of the same thing.
Yeah.
So huge replayability.
There are lots of ingredient books tiles that come with it, and you'll select sort of some basic starting ones, and then new ones will come out, and that's where you've got the variety for what the actual ingredients will do and how they'll vary your game, and that's great.
And you can change it up to be trickier with the combos or simpler.
It's also got double-sided boards,
yes,
which they recommend for more advanced play, which just offers another sort of couple of decisions that you need to make. So, look, you play this once and you go, yep, I can see why this is a Kenner game. It's light, it's easy, it's quick. So is it a hardcore heavy game, a gamer's game? No, but it's a Kenner game.
Yeah.
And that's where we're at. We've talked previously about how Kenner's getting lighter, Spiel is getting lighter. It's just a nature of where gaming is at the moment. But I had a hell of a lot of fun with this one, and I was so pleasantly surprised. Not just because I won.
Yeah.
Well, it was one of the ones I didn't get a chance to get it to the table myself, but everyone that I... You guys, as well as everybody else that played it, which was nearly non-stop. There was a copy of this on a table at least somewhere in the convention. I hadn't heard a bad word about it.
No. Well,
I was going to say, Phoebe and Mark, the couple that we played with, Phoebe Wild has her fantastic blog and website, Cardboard Vault, and I think they had played it like four times in a row with different people, and they were just continuing to have fun with it, and that was almost on the same basic setting each time.
And you know that's also a thing that people would walk past and go, ooh, that, I want to play that, or not know what that is, but go, that looks interesting, couldn't you teach me later?
Correct.
Which is a few games like that for this BorderCon happened, and this was definitely one of them.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's all I've got to say about Die Quacksalber von Quedlinburg.
Okay, we'll be back shortly. We'll talk about the next Kennerspiel game. That was Midnight Masquerade by Violet Swells, a Tassie act here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. You're with the Dice Men Cometh, talking board games, card games, all sorts of things. And as always, we want to thank our fantastic sponsors, Area 52. Now, you may not be able to get the three games we're talking tonight there because they're hot off the presses from Germany, but you can get a whole lot of other games there. The ones from last year, the Spiel winners from last year. You know, you can also get role-playing games. And don't forget your Funko Vinyl Pops.
God.
Something Leon, changed.
Yes.
Are you pretty clever?
I would like to think so.
Yeah.
So in that case, I'm going to play one of the other nominees by our friend Wolfgang, who just designs all the games we play these days, apparently, which is Ganz schön clever, which is German for very or pretty clever. And what this game is it's a roll and write game. Now, that might sound kind of foreign to some people because it's definitely not the hotness in game design these days, mainly because I can't really think of a huge game that is a roll and write game. And what I mean by that is a game that normally all you pretty much do is roll a bunch of die and you'll have a board in front of you or a piece of paper that you will write on it.
Yahtzee.
Well, Yahtzee's the main one, but I mean, that's obviously very old, and in this day and age, we kind of don't really talk much about the classic these days. There's been no real big version of it, but maybe this game is
it. Giant Yahtzee.
Giant Yahtzee, indeed. So, Ganz schön clever. I'm going to give a brief description on how this game works. I won't go through all the rules, mainly because when I was researching this game earlier today, my wife was in our lounge room, I was in the office, and every few seconds she heard me going, "Ugh." And she thought I was being sick. What I was doing was I was reading through the rule book of this game and being bored out of my brain.
Were you trying to read it in German?
No, although I should have done. That probably would have been more entertaining. So what you will do on your turn, there is six die that you roll. They're all different colours, and there is a white die especially that is your wild, which is very important. So the other ones, you've got yellow, blue, green, orange, and purple. On your turn, you will roll the die, and you will get to use up to three of them, depending on the numbers that come up on the die. And the ones you don't use, you will put aside, and everybody else at the table gets to use one of those die as for a special action, which I'll explain in a minute, which I'll give them that. I like that mechanic. It's always good. It's never like your turn is pretty much never over by that count. You're not sitting there waiting for your turn. There's always something decision to be made on somebody else's turn.
Yeah, it's like the follow mechanic in a lot of games where the lead player will get to do something and have a bonus, but everyone's still involved.
It's a good way to keep people involved. Mm. So you'll do that on your turn, and what you will do with these die is each die you have represents a different track on the bit of paper that you have in front of you. So the five different tracks, there's the yellow track, which is kind of a grid of all the different numbers that you could have rolled with a yellow die, and what you do is you'll just cross off one of them with whatever you had on the yellow die.
You roll a six with your yellow die, you can cross off the six.
Yellow six. And then you've got the blue track, which is very similar, except on the blue track, you use the blue die as well as the white die, so that you have to always add that number together. Although it's still kind of very similar, although on the blue track, you don't get special bonuses when you fill up a row on the diagonal, whereas the yellow one, you do. And then the other three tracks are all just horizontal all the way across. So the green track is one where if you put one of your green dice, you tick it off, the next one has to be the next number up. So you pretty much go from 1 to 6 moving across this track. The other ones are orange. Orange is the simplest one. Orange, you can put down any number that's on the orange face die at any point. Mm-hmm. There is no rule restriction at all. But at the end of the game, your points for the orange track will just be added up all the numbers that are on there. So you want to try and put your 4, your 5s, and your 6s, unless it gets to a point where you're about to hit a special ability, you might want to put a number there just to get that ability.
Yeah.
Because I will tell you in 2 seconds, after the next one, which is the purple, which is pretty much very similar to the green, and that you have to have the next number, but you don't have to have the exact number up, you can go up a couple. And then once you hit to the number 6... then you can go back and put the next number can be anything you want. Mm. So if you go...
6 is the reset.
Yes, pretty much. So if you get a 4, the next number has to be a 5 or a 6. If it's a 6, then you can go next number anything. But, as I said, as you move along all these tracks, you will unlock special abilities. And this is kind of where the actual game of this is.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you need to... You want to try and chain all these special abilities to get lots of different stuff on your turn and on other people's turns. So these bonus abilities are simple things like they will let you cross off any box on one of the yellow, blue, or green tracks that you have.
Basically, just a free box, which equals free scoring.
Yeah, so you don't even have to have the die, and it doesn't even have to be that specific number that you need. You can just cross it off, which moves you a bit forward. Or on the purple, orange tracks, you can put a 4, 5, or a 6, which are the larger numbers, the harder ones to get. Especially on the orange track, you want to put as many 6s on there as you can because they're the ones you're going to score. Or the final one is the fox symbol. Now, the fox symbol is on each of the tracks. What the fox symbol does is for how many of those you get at the end of this game is you will score the points again for the section with the lowest that you've used.
Yes.
So it is one of those games, similar to a few others we played at Bordercon this year, that you will get bonuses for kind of spreading yourself around. You don't want to go all the way after one thing. You need to kind of move around to different stuff because you could be doing that low scoring a few times, and that could even win you the game.
Yep.
And two of the other ones is rerolls, which speaks for itself. You reroll the things that you just did. And then there's plus ones, which is not plus one to a die, but you actually get to use an action again from that same die.
Which is arguably the hardest thing to explain about this game.
Yeah.
Because we're so used to plus one being, I just get to add a number.
It's a plus one, but it's not. It's what it should have called like action or something. It could have been called anything.
Free dice, because you get to use one of those dice that are sitting in front of you just one more time for one more reason.
Yeah, and that's pretty much the entire game. You'll go through that and you'll play it a certain amount of rounds depending on the amount of players you have. Your 2, 3, 4, your 5.
Six even, sorry.
And then you add up all your score, and then whoever has the most points wins.
Yes.
So it's just that simple. Not much to it.
Leon, the thing you didn't mention, unless I fell asleep and missed it, is what happens is I take my turn.
Yes.
And I get to use, on my turn, I get to use 3 of the dice.
Yes.
Now, each time I roll, I set aside, so I roll the first time, I roll all 6. I have to set one dice aside that I'm going to use, one die that I'm going to use. Then any dice that are less than that number, they go out.
Yes.
So you have to be careful. Like if I roll and I get a 6 and I want to keep the 6, well, it means the only dice I can re-roll for my second and third goes are going to be 6s.
Rather 6s, yeah.
So often you find you're taking a low number just to keep a high amount of dice in the re-roll. And that's that tricky balancing thing where you can't just go, yeah, I'm going to take all the high dice. And then those are the ones that go out. They're the dice that the people whose turn it isn't, at the end of the round, they get to pick one of those to Markov on their sheets.
Exactly.
Which is normally the lower numbers, which means they're the ones you get out really early to kind of get yourself going, but then after that you need really specific numbers. Right, so that's pretty much how the game plays.
Correct.
Now, what do we think about it? I will go first. What is the bloody point of the... It's just Advanced Yahtzee. How has this game been nominated for an award in 2018? It's just... It was fine. Richard taught us the rules very well. I understood it, and I was just playing it and just going, literally, he could have just said, do you want to play Yahtzee? And it would have made no other impact on me whatsoever. I just don't understand the appeal to this. I would have much rather have sat in a room with many people that are Mark's age and play bingo. At least then, you know, you could possibly get a meat tray out of it at the end.
Or a $5 Coles voucher.
Yeah, so this is one
worse,
of the...
We're not-
So there are other games at the con that we played that we probably liked less, but I'd probably more likely to go, you know what, but there was still something in there and I could have just had a bad experience, I'll give it a crack. I just don't know why I would play this again. It was just so eh.
Yeah, I certainly feel a lot the same. You go out and you go, okay, well, I'll play this, and you roll some dice, which is always fun, and you get an idea of how everything works, and you go, yeah, that's okay. But the key is all about those combos, because
the chains.
If you get the combo where you get a free green thing, which allows you then to put one in the green track, which then allows you to do a reroll, which then gets you to do another dice, all of those can chain and give you buku points. You can get crazy points if you chain those together. But is it fun? I mean, it's okay.
That's the thing. I get it, but it's just... I just don't see the point. I just really don't.
I think Mark is probably the sole differing opinion out of this, and even that might be differing with your own opinion depending on the player numbers. Is that right?
Yes. So, look, I played it first with our friend Richard again. I played it with two players because you guys had played it earlier. Then you went off and did something, left me all by myself.
Probably played a much better game, I reckon.
But anyway, so Richard and I had a little bit of time to fill before we started something else. So we played this with two players, and I had quite a bit of fun. Now, look, it's got to be said, I was a big Yahtzee fan back in the day, and I love me some dice chucking, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So there was that. But as a two-player game, because every second turn you are doing the thing that this game is all about, where you're rolling all the dice and you're making those strategic decisions, I found it much more strategic than when I played it later on with four, and you're only doing the thing once every four rounds, basically, because the other three you're just getting to pick one die. The four player was okay. The two player was a much, much better game. And immediately I started thinking my partner, she loves Sudoku and puzzles like that. She's into very puzzly stuff. I was like, oh, she's going to love this.
Mm-hmm.
Because that whole thing of, oh, well, if I cross off that six, that's going to give me this, but then I'm going to get access to less die. You really can delve into the thinking of where am I going to put my number to let me access the more dice next time, set up those chains because they can be really clever. It can be a little bit thinky when you get into that. And certainly my experience, the two-player was much better.
Yep. Well, they're definitely all fair points. I can see that. But at the end of the day, is this a game that's going to bring the roll and write game out of the kind of nothingness that it is at the moment and into the light? No, I don't think so. And if this game was not nominated for anything and we just sat down and played it, I'd probably have quite a bit of a different opinion on it. But if somebody's trying to tell me that this is in one of the possibly top three, even in the top 10 best games in the world of this year or of last year around for this specific kind of category, no. Just no.
There have been quite a few roll and writes. Garth, do you want to click on that where it says family roll and write? I mean, the one that you probably would know, Leon, is Through the Ages, the Bronze Age.
Yeah. Yep.
So that was one of the earlier ones.
Yep.
And I know I've just seen on Kickstarter, I might have even talked about it, there was a one about bands touring across America.
Yep.
And as you moved your band, you ticked off the various cities that you'd been to.
And there's ones that, is it like Roll Through America and Roll Through Europe or something like that?
Yeah, so they have, I mean, and the Castles of Burgundy, the dice game, is another one I know that's been really popular. So it has been a genre that has been more present in our hobby, but is this the best one ever?
No.
No way. Is this an award-winning game?
Well, potentially. Look, it is.
Maybe we should leave our summary after we've talked about the three games and then we can make a comparison and say what we think. But, look, if someone said to me, hey, this is an award-nominated game, if I had seen it, in my news feed, I would never have believed it.
No. And if anyone wants to try it, it's really easy just to find six different coloured dice.
Yeah, and just print out your own version of the map from BGG.
Not saying you should do that. I'm saying you should fully support the artists and the publishers.
Oh, yeah, nothing
but
against
if you want
them.
To give it a go before outlaying some hard, cold cash,
yeah.
It's probably one of the easiest games to do.
And I'm sure it's probably insanely cheap.
Yeah,
well.
I was going to say, so, it's probably going to be very cheap anyway, because it's basically six dice and a score pad.
Yeah. Multiple score pads. Can't have one, otherwise you play it once and it's done.
No, a pad, not a sheet. Yeah, but anyway.
Anyway.
So, shall we take another break?
Yeah.
We'll come back and talk about the third one, and then we'll have a bit of a wrap-up and give our opinion of what's going to win.
Of course.
We'll come back shortly.
I'm on the drug. I'm on the drug. I'm on the drug. The Killed River Phoenix. I'm on the drug. I'm on the drug. I'm on the drug.
Hello everyone, sorry to interrupt, but it is your friendly neighbourhood Leon here. I just wanted to take a few seconds to remind our old listeners and to all our new that you can support The Dice Men Cometh on Patreon. You can jump over to thedicemencometh.com and there is a link sitting there on the front page. You can give as little or as much as you want every month and we are very, very appreciative. I myself do it for several different podcasts and a dollar or two comes out and I don't even notice. And I can tell you right now that if everyone listening to my voice right now only gave us a dollar every month, we would be very, very happy, lads. And every cent that you spend goes straight back into the show. We've been using it, as well as the advertising from our lovely sponsors, to go all around Australia to see you guys at every convention we can get our hands on, and hopefully we might even be doing it internationally soon, so watch this space. Also, you could jump over to redbubble.com and search for Dice Men, and you can get our logo onto all different kind of merchandise. We ourselves have them on t-shirts and hoodies and coffee cups and stuff, and they're really cool, and that's another way you can support us as well. The show has grown leaps and bounds in the last year or so, and it is thanks to the effort and support of you lovely people out there. You keep giving and keep giving us material, and we will keep doing the show. So, love to all of you, and now back to the action.
Well, there you go. That was Tism with "You'll Never Be an Old Man River." You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and it is time for the third of three Kennerspiel-nominated games to be discussed.
I just need to quickly mention the fact that we've played two songs tonight that are pretty good, and that's a record for us.
That's because of this new automated system where we have some control over both the style of music and the length of the song, so hallelujah.
Indeed.
Awesome. Let us talk about one of my favourite things.
Yes.
In this game, which is made up of two things.
Okay.
Heaven.
Yes.
And ale.
Oh, you are.
I'll leave it up to you to decide which is which.
You are always going on about that bibble thing.
That's right. So designed by Michael Kiesling and Andreas Schmidt in 2017 with art, I'll get to that in a second, by Christina Fiore.
Ooh.
Yeah, not much. Published by Egert Spiel. You have been assigned to lead an ancient monastery and its brewery. Now is your time to brew the best beer under God's blue sky. The fine art of brewing beer demands your best timing. In order to get the best results of your production, you have to provide your cloister's garden with fertile resources and the right number of monks helping with the harvest. But keep your brewmaster in mind, as he's ready and eager to refine each and every one of your barrels. In Heaven and Ale, you have to overcome the harsh competition of your fellow players. There is a fine balance between upgrading your cloister's garden and harvesting the resources you need to fill your barrels. Only those who manage to keep a cool head are able to win the race for the best beer.
What?
That's what the publisher says.
Oh, okay, cool.
Okay. Now, not only was this game nominated in the Kennerspiel, it's also been nominated in the Italian Game Award called Goblin Magnifico.
As one does.
And it was also nominated in the Golden Geeks for the best strategy board game.
Nominated, you say?
Yes, correct. So, you've got some score tracks in this game. You've got a lot of score tracks. Or it's all the one track, really. But you've got all these different markers on the score tracks. You've got, as every good brewer knows, hops, ooh, yeast, water, and grain. They're the four things you need to make beer. You've got wood as well. Because I guess you make the barrels,
I guess,
maybe?
So.
Perhaps.
And then you've got your Braumeister.
Oh, the old Braumeister.
The master brewer. So what you're doing on this game, you've got a board. You're moving around an oval-shaped track that has lots of spaces where you can purchase tiles that have ingredients or monks. Now, it's one of these boards where at the end of each round, and I think there were six rounds from memory, it randomly gets filled. So certain spots take resources, certain spots take monks, certain spots you can score, certain spots you can do some other scoring. But the main thing you're doing is you're moving around, you're taking these resource tiles and putting them onto your own player board. On your player board, the most important choice is, am I going to put this thing that I've got? Let's say I've taken a number four hops, make a nice IPA maybe. You're going to put it on the light side of the hill?
Well, of course you are.
Or the dark side of the hill?
Don't do that.
If you put it on the light side, then when you score it, it will score points and move up your, in this case, hop marker on the score track. If you place it on the dark side, it will give you money.
Mm.
But, of course, you need money to buy these things. So, you know, that's a sort of interesting decision, I guess. Then you've got monks. So you, apart from those resources I mentioned, you've got monks. You place monks. Monks will move your brewmeister around the number of spots based on how many other tiles they touch.
Do you want us to just start calling you the brewmeister?
Nine.
Okay, good.
And then, so the monks are basically going, putting your resources to work.
It's Brewmeister General, isn't it?
Supreme.
Right.
And then when you complete a ring of six hexes, did I mention it's a hex map? So when you complete a ring of six hexes, in the middle you get to place a shed.
Yay!
Every Aussie bloke loves a shed.
Mm.
But not just any shed. Because you basically add up. So each of these tiles will have a number from 1 to 6, not the monks, the resources. And you'll add up those numbers. That's also the cost when you buy the tile. You add up those numbers, that'll tell you there'll be a range of what quality shed you get to put. When you put the shed in, you know, well, you go.
Oh, I'm listening.
This you go like, you know, your Zinkaloom or your one that looks like a dunny falling down sort of thing, right? But basically the different sheds will activate a different number of tiles that are already down. So you basically get to score them again. So if they're on the dark side, you get more money. If on the light side, you move some of these score tracks. Now, there are also scoring spots, which wow. lets you do some scoring, which may be money or maybe victory points or resources or things. There's 10 scoring spots on your board,
wow.
but you only get to score each one once.
Well, of course.
So you might get a whole bunch of hops and then score them at the start of the game, but if you buy more hops, you're not going to get to score them again.
Well, you made a poor decision.
And then each pair of those scoring spaces, if you fill the two of them, they're not necessarily related, but if you fill the two, you get to use these special privilege cards out of your hand, which you have a hand of five, and it's like a one-off special thing. So you might get some money, you might get to move your brewmaster, you might get to do a thing.
Oh, do a thing.
Then on Riverton. The board, there's also barrel spots.
Do you get to score them?
Barrel spots are special victory point spots.
More scoring. Whee!
And so basically you can claim a barrel if you've completed a certain thing. So if you've filled in the whole light side or the whole dark side, or if you've got 5 1-value resources or 4 or 5 6-value resources, or you've got all 4 monks because there's 4 different types of monks. Is this sounding fun yet?
No.
So wait.
Oh, hang
there's
on.
There's more.
There's more monks?
Yeah, no, there's more rubbish.
Oh, okay.
Right.
So at the game end, when you've basically gone around the 6 turns, done this thing 6 times, there's this really weird sort of like averaging mechanic. So firstly, I didn't mention all your resource markers, they don't start at 0 on the score track.
Just for anyone listening at home, Leon's now on his phone. So, Leon, I'll tell you when you need to make a witty jibe.
Right.
No, it's for reasons of the show, I guarantee it.
Yeah.
So, perhaps. When you... the score markers all start less than 0.
Okay.
So wood starts on 0 and they go to like -2, -4, -6 on the negative side of the score track.
My wife just said that the wood could be used to heat up the beer as well.
Oh, there you go.
It could.
Very good. Thank you, sweetheart.
Live research.
The music is good this week, isn't it? Be home soon.
So, so you're starting less than 0, okay? And then what happens at the end of the game is there's this weird mechanic where you sort of average out these resource markers. So depending on where your brewmaster is, it might be on a spot that says 3-1. What you do is you reduce the leading resource by 3 to move up your worst resource by one. And you basically do this, so you're moving back, moving back, moving back, to move the back ones up.
Now,
then depend where you basically end up averaged, you then multiply that number by a multiplier depending on where your brewmaster is on the score track.
Now, we've just talked about...
Are you confused yet?
Quacksalber von Quedlinburg and Gunshon Clever and sort of said they're not really that complicated. This sounds needlessly complicated.
Well, look, good friend Rachel, it took her about 20 minutes to explain how to play the game.
Yep.
After 10 minutes in my head, I'd already gone, there is no way this is a Kennerspiel game if it takes more than 10 minutes
to
explain
the rules.
Was
this little monkey in your head just going, yeah,
that's
well,
right.
Gunshon's Clever takes probably half an hour to learn and play with four people.
At most.
That's right. But
I guess the main thing is it's about brewing. It's like you love this game.
No. That is the saddest thing about this game.
Mm-hmm.
You never at any stage take these wonderful resources that everyone knows that's how you make beer and turn them into beer.
Oh, that's
nice. It's just four score tracks that combine together and average out with a fifth score track, five score tracks, six score tracks. It's just a bunch of score tracks.
Right. Are any of them fun score tracks,
you
Mark?
Never
did you
make
enjoy
beer.
This? You are the only one of us who played this, so we, Leon and I, don't have opinions on it. Clearly, it's maybe not your favourite game ever.
Look, if I went into this game thinking, yeah, I'm going to score
then
some
you're
tracks,
up. Then
maybe I wouldn't have been so disappointed. But I'd heard this was a good game, and I'd heard it was about brewing beer. This game is not about brewing beer. This game is about moving some stuff along some score tracks, making a nice little tiles. The art, did I mention the art?
Yeah.
Is really ordinary. Okay. The monks look like they were drawn by a five-year-old.
Yeah, they were shocking. I walked past the game and played that, and they don't look good.
So, I mean, firstly, this is just a bland game with too many scoring tracks.
Have you played Gunshon Clever?
But, you know, it's way, if you compare these three games, it's way too complex to be in the same category as these other two games.
All right, well, hold that thought, because we're going to throw to a super quick song.
Oh, really?
Yes. And then we can each just say which game we think's going to win, okay?
Okay.
All right, so where the Dice Men cometh, it is Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and here is a song. Well, there you go. That was Australian band Spider Bait with Buy Me a Pony.
Three good songs. We've done it.
Yeah, I know. Don't expect it next week.
Nope.
Dice Men Cometh, Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Leon.
Yes.
Which one of these three were your favouritest and least favouritest and why? Go.
Well, I played the Gunshon's Clever or whatever. That was, that was much of a muchness.
Yep.
I didn't play Heaven and Ale, although we do have to mention, Mark, to be all honest, that we did not hear many negatives. Your opinion was nearly everyone I'd heard that played it had, I wouldn't say loved it, I'd heard anyone saying, oh, it's amazing, but most people did enjoy playing it.
Well, I checked some reviews today online and they were all positive.
Yeah, well, like I said, sadly sometimes we're in the minority. We're always right. Don't get me wrong about that.
Although, they did all agree with me.
That the art is shocking.
Yes.
And there's
but,
no theme.
But no, yeah. I mean, it was all about the score tracks, but they thought it was clever the way the score
So Heaven and Ale I was kind of interested in, but now that you've told me about it, not really. No. I didn't play the Quacken Quedlinburg or whatever, but I did want to play it then, and I still want to play it now. So that is the game that I don't know if it's going to win because I can't because I haven't played all three games, but that's the one I'm most interested in that I would like to see do well.
Well, when I was doing my research today to put my little notes together for Heaven and Ale, what I noticed was on Board Game Geek, they have this thing, and I don't know how they calculate it, called complexity rating.
Okay.
And let's click on the thing. It's a community rating for how difficult the game is to understand. Lower rating means easier. And what I noticed was it's out of 5.
Right.
Heaven and Ale, 3.17.
Yes.
Gunshon Clever, 2.0.
Right.
And Quacks von Quedlinburg, 2.21.
Right.
So, I mean, you could say that Heaven and Ale is at least sort of 20% more complex than those other two?
Well, it is Michael Kiesling. So, and it is from a designer who traditionally does produce heavier games. Not heavy, but heavier than this Wolfgang Wench guy who's seemingly come out of nowhere and had a couple of potentially really big games.
Mm. Well, and the really strange thing, I guess, strange to be having this argument is we're almost saying that game's not light enough to be a Kenner Spiel, which started off as, I mean, Kenner sort of for German is like no. So it's like those who know games, it's been called the connoisseur's game in the past, but basically an advanced game. But what they're really saying now is, well, for those families that've maybe played some of those super simple games, this is one next level up.
Yeah, so what's your pick, though?
Well, for me, Heaven and Ale is too complex to be in this category with where they're aiming it to go. Gunsjong Clever, as I said, I liked it as a two-player game, but there's I like the little score sheet, but there's nothing earth-shattering about it. It's not doing anything different, whereas I think Quacks von Quedlinburg, most people, I would say, who are looking to play the Kennerspiel games, as in they've played light games and they're looking for something a bit more, I don't think they will ever have played a bag builder, whereas plenty of them will have played Yahtzee. So I think it introduces that mechanic, which is lovely. It's got a nice, simple push-your-luck mechanism. It's fun, it's easy, it's quick. If things go as they should, I think that the Quacks should be the winner.
Well, there you go. And for me, my concern is Gunsjong Clever is easy and would fly off the shelf. And obviously, they're looking at games that are easy to pick up, easy to teach, easy to play. Gantz ticks all those boxes. You look at Quacks, and you go, after playing it now, yeah, I get it. It was easy to describe. Yeah. It was easy to pick up. But it was a little bit more complicated. You had to balance the, what am I going to buy? Am I going to go for victory points? Am I going to go for dollars? What ingredients do I want to put into my bag? But then Heaven and Ale certainly seems to be the next level. And I think, for a lot of Kennerspiel games, the theme on this is maybe going to sort of limit the mass appeal. I mean,
I think the
kids
name,
aren't going to play it. Yeah,
the name, like people are going to look at this name and go, Quacks von Quedlinburg. Yeah. Unless this is something that is well known in German culture, and maybe we're missing something, they're going to go, "Oh, it's that really fun festival we know," because I think it's just made up. It's not a catchy, fun name. Could have
it's
been
got
so
that
many
alliteration
things.
Or, that they go for. But anyway, like the two of you, that'll be my pick. I'll still be going for the Quacks purely because I had fun and it seems to fit the weight and the style of game that is Kenner that we know.
Okay.
Because we are all out of time where we will be talking about BorderCon and a couple of SDJ-nominated games as well. But we are out of here. Where the Dice Men Cometh. It is the 14th of June already. Mm. It's deepest, darkest winter. It is Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We love Area 52. We love talking to everybody out there. But also, we love going home or going to the pub, and we are going to do those things. So I've been Garth.
I've been Leon. And thank you to a lovely BorderCon, all our BorderCon friends.
Yes. And I continue to be Mark, and thank you to everyone for listening. We love yous all.
Exactly. Bye.
Booyah.
You've been listening to another episode of The Dice Men Cometh. Thanks to Area 52, Hobart's best ventilated game store, and more. Find out more on area52.com.au. They support The Dice Men, and you can too, at Patreon, for as little as just $1 per month. It's not a lot to ask for podcasting gold.